She forgot all about bumping into Sam the moment she saw the package that had been left. Picking it up slowly, she stared at it for the longest time. Holding it in her hand, turning it over, knowing what was inside, remembering when she had ordered it, desperate for home, the familiar. It had taken her forever to find online, and the postage had cost a fortune. The day itself had passed a while ago, and she thought about the package finding its way to her. Now it was here. She held it to her chest and climbed the stairs, feeling her eyes sting. She bit her lip as she entered the flat. Walking slowly over to the armchair, she sank into it, staring at the letters on the brown wrapping for an age. Then, drawing one fingernail across the opening, she tore at it, revealing the box inside, sliding open the box to draw out the brown beer bottle, paper shavings scattering everywhere. She held up the bottle, staring at the label for a long time. Then she let out a sob and started crying, gulping in air and letting her face run with tears. What was she doing in England? How long would she be here for? She remembered this time last year, how different things had been. Wallowing in self-pity, she gave in to her emotions, the bottle and the flat both blurred by the tears pouring from her eyes. Then, as if she were in a horror movie, she heard a creak as a door opened impossibly slowly.
"Clara?" said Joe in an uncertain voice.
"Oh, you're in!"
she hiccuped, frantically wiping at her wet face. His eyes widened as he hurried over to her.
"Can I call anyone?"
She shook her head, unable to respond.
"Do you need a doctor? Are you unwell?"
Clara shook her head again.
"No," she said. "I'm fine."
His voice went up a notch.
"Would you like me to fetch your friend? The woman from the dinner party?"
"Lauren,"
Clara choked out.
"That's it," he agreed. "Of course. Lauren. Shall I fetch her?"
"No,"
she said, aware of the tears streaking her cheeks.
"I'll be okay in a minute."
He lingered next to her, placing one hand on the back of the sofa, then removing it, looking at her as if she was a wild animal.
"Tea,"
he barked, as if pouncing on the word.
"I can make you some tea."
He didn't wait for her to respond, but headed straight to the kitchen and flicked on the kettle.
"Milk, sugar,"
he called out rapid fire.
"Okay,"
she mumbled, dabbing at her face. He waited in the kitchen, back tense, giving her wary looks every 10 seconds or so, big false smiles when he caught her eye.
"It's on its way,"
he chimed in a voice she didn't recognize. He was stirring the cup, still looking at her, tea sloshing over the side as if she might dissolve in front of him. She felt a small hiccup of laughter break through the tears at his unease.
"Great."
He walked over, carrying the mug as if it were the crown jewels, and laid it on the table in front of her.
"Tea,"
he smiled, pointing at it as if she was 2 years old and he was teaching her new words. She picked it up and took a sip, trying not to wince at the sugar in it, then setting it back down as he stood by her like a waiter waiting for her verdict.
"Excellent,"
she said, hoping he might leave her alone now.
"Right. So..."
He didn't go, but paused in front of the sofa before clearly making the decision to sit down. He stared at the floor, then looked back up at her.
"Better?"
he said, probably hoping he could be released. She nodded, feeling strangely moved by his expression.
Oh no, the tears were starting again.
She felt an errant one roll down her face. Joe slouched as he spotted it.
"What's happened? Can I help?"
His voice was softer now, no edge, and she felt grateful for the fact that he was behaving like a human being rather than the manic businessman she always seemed to encounter.
"I missed a special day at home," she said, reaching for the tea to try and distract herself.
He nodded, his expression confused.
Your birthday?
He ventured. She smiled, shaking her head.
No, it was Yule Day, the sort of start of Christmas. It was a while ago now, but it's a big thing in Denmark.
Okay,
Joe said, his fingers forming a steeple under his chin.
So, why the tears?
She jerked her head at the beer bottle.
I ordered that. I don't know why. We drink it on Yule Day.
Beer.
This exact beer, Clara explained.
Everyone dresses up in blue Santa hats and there are massive parties in the streets.
There's foam and this beer is delivered by horse and cart.
Joe was back to looking completely perplexed as he followed her finger to the beer bottle by her armchair.
Right. Foam. Beer.
I know it sounds silly, she said.
Not at all,
he said, probably hoping she wouldn't cry again.
No, I know it does, she said, wiping at her eyes. It's just... It reminds me of... Of what's ahead.
Joe didn't hazard a guess.
Christmas,
she explained in a quiet voice.
Not a fan.
She sniffed, trying to stem the fresh tears.
No, it's not that. I love Christmas. I just...
Joe was biting his lip, clearly trying to keep up.
So, what's the problem?
Clara swallowed, placing both hands on her thighs, trying to compose herself.
There's no problem, really. I'm just being silly. Well, it reminded me of things.
The beer?
The beer,
she laughed, feeling marginally better for having had a cry.
I'll be fine.
Thanks for the tea. She nodded at the mug, which was still almost full. Joe's cheeks flushed pink.
Glad to help,
he said, standing up as if she'd dismissed him. He paused before moving towards her, placing a hand on her shoulder.
I hope you feel better later,
he said. Then, with a quick cough, backed away.
Right, I'm going to... I'll be...
And he scurried into his bedroom. She stared at his door long after it closed. Then, shutting her eyes, she leant back in the chair, replaying the scene and groaning into her hands. Note to self. Next time you want to cry, check flat is empty. As she thought back on the conversation, though, she found herself smiling. God, what on earth did he think of her? How could she explain? And then she was shaking with laughter, a bit of snot escaping just as his door was flung open once more.
All okay?
He looked panicked again, and she shot upright, wiping at her nose.
Fine. I was just, laughing.
Joe's eyes rounded further.
Oh, that's good,
he said, pausing only briefly before shutting the door for a second time. Clara stayed where she was, a smile frozen on her face, until she heard the latch click. Then she smacked her forehead with her hand.
Don't!
Said Lady Carcar from behind her.
A makeover in the pub? How lovely! What have you done with it? Will you send me photos? I do miss the place. But enough of that. I am, of course, thoroughly enjoying being out here. The heat is fantastic, and I am walnut brown. I look absurd, as if someone has painted me in mahogany varnish. Like a native. I am considering getting my hair dyed blonde at the ends. It's very fashionable with the Germans here. You see, I might have been out here too long on my own. I won't, of course. I've settled for wearing an ankle bracelet everywhere, which is just about curing me of doing anything too permanent. Now, let me just say right now that VAR isn't a word, Gavin. I have asked every German in my hotel, and they speak much better English than me, and all of them have confirmed that this is a terrible lie, and you are winning
through cheating. I'm sorry to be so blunt, but I really must ask you to start defining the words you use if you insist on using some kind of entirely made-up language. Maybe you have set your version of the game on something that isn't English UK. Do check. I will wait for your reply before playing again. Chapter 27. He hadn't been back all week, stuck in the office for long days, overseeing the final stage of the merger. Constant conference calls, updates to bosses, ensuring that Tom saw him issuing instructions to an overworked graduate trainee who really looked as if he could do with a square meal. He'd headed back to his flat, standing in the doorway as he took in the stark, cold surfaces. The cold grey outside seemed to seep inside. He'd stayed up late on his laptop, minimizing spreadsheets to browse online, ordering lamps, rugs, candlesticks from an eye-wateringly expensive designer Clara had once mentioned. Werner someone. A furry hot water bottle cover, a new pair of slippers. The next day he'd left the office with an overwhelming urge to block out the stress of the day, get back to his apartment, cook a meal. He felt he was making changes and they were working. He had more energy, fewer headaches, felt better. Now it was Saturday night, and normally he'd be lining up a date from an internet dating app or heading to a casino into the early hours. Or working. Sourcing articles for insider news, going over the paperwork his team had prepared, replying to emails from earlier that week. Instead, he found himself driving back to sleepy Suffolk, his heart lifting at the thought of finally getting back to the village after a long week. As if he was driving home. He was smiling as he parked, looking up at the windows of the flat and wondering whether Clara was in. He hadn't seen her since beer bottle weeping gate. He was still not absolutely sure what she'd been sad about. Something about foam and blue Santa hats. It was obviously a Danish thing. Or a female thing. Or both. He would do what any self-respecting man would do and pretend it hadn't happened, he thought, as he stepped out of the car and reached for his leather holdall. Moving through the corridor and up to the flat, he readied himself for seeing her. He wished he'd spent some time there that week. Witnessing her upset had reminded him that she wasn't always the contented, happy person she appeared. He'd spotted her out on the pavement with that journalist just before she'd been crying. He hoped she hadn't turned to him for comfort. She wasn't in the living room, probably still shutting up the shop from earlier or working on another display. He would go and find her, see if she wanted a takeaway. Just as he was turning round to head back down the stairs, she stepped out of her bedroom. Normally she lived in cozy jumpers and jeans, but tonight she was wearing a black top with some shiny details on the shoulders over a pair of electric blue trousers. Her legs seemed longer. He found himself staring as she shrugged on her coat.
"Oh, hey, you're here."
"I'm here," Joe said in a too loud voice. He dropped his bag.
"Lauren's taking me to the cinema," she said, gesturing to her outfit. "I think it's overkill, but I haven't been out in ages." Her eyes were all smoky and dark, her lips glossy.
Joe found his brain freeze until he realized he was definitely meant to respond.
"You look..."
The words hit him then.
"The cinema. Great!"
he said, reaching to put a hand up on the mantelpiece in a casual way and missing. Righting himself, he nodded.
"Anything good on?"
"Lauren wants to see something with Ryan Gosling?"
Clara shrugged. Joe nodded.
"He's a good-looking guy. Smooth. And, you know, shiny."
"What are you talking about, Joe?"
"Well, I'll just be here, waiting. I mean, not waiting for you, but, you know, having a night in. Or maybe out. I haven't decided."
He knew he was gabbling. He wondered what had come over him.
Was it the shiny things on her top? Hypnotizing him.
"That sounds like a plan. It's raining again."
Joe rolled his eyes and tusked. Before he could think of anything better than weather chat, she was picking up her bag and giving him a smile.
"See you later, then," she said, heading out the door.
"Yup,"
he trilled.
"Okay, then."
With a last puzzled look, she left the flat, and Joe sank into the sofa as if the last few minutes had exhausted him. Well, it was good nothing was still awkward between them. He got up to fetch a beer. An hour and 3 beers later, he was feeling sleepy. Moving around the flat, he lit all the candles and the wood burner, the living room a flickering, calm haven. He changed into his pajamas, shrugged on his dressing gown, and unearthed a pair of oversized slippers in the shape of animal claws that his mother had bought him for Christmas 1 year. With his toasty new look, he returned to the sofa with a tray piled high with bottles and snacks. He hadn't watched a DVD since the time he had been ill with a chest infection and had been bedbound for 3 days. And even then he'd chosen Wall Street just to stay in the zone. He rifled through his mother's DVD collection as he sipped at another beer. The choices were sparse. He'd never heard of Nicholas Sparks, but he'd give it a go. He noticed it had Ryan Gosling in it and couldn't help smiling. Clara hadn't needed to leave. The rain was drumming against the windows, the wind a distant whistle as Joe snuggled under a rug, a hot water bottle clutched to his chest, chocolate buttons melting in his mouth, the beer flowing freely. There was something to be said for Clara's hygge theory. Staying in really was the new going out. He felt his body relax into the sofa, the whole world outside the flat dissolve away so that it was just him in his snug space with the DVD for company. An hour and a half later, with the tears streaming down his cheeks and dripping from his nose, he failed to hear the chatter on the staircase outside, the door click open. He jumped as Lauren and Clara stepped into the flat and wiped frantically at his face. Nicholas Sparks had a lot of explaining to do. He felt his throat still thick with tears, his nose running as he dabbed at it with the sleeve of his dressing gown.
"Hey,"
he croaked, his hot water bottle falling out and landing in between his oversized claw feet. Clara and Lauren both stopped short and stared at him.
"Why is one of us always catching the other crying?"
Clara laughed, breaking the mood. Joe found he still couldn't speak. "What are you watching?" Lauren frowned, walking towards him, before spotting the DVD case.
"Oh, my God!" she cried, scooping it up and waving at him. "The Notebook! On your own! Are you mad? You need a support network for that kind of thing. Some good gal pals. Are you okay? Do you want us to hold you?"
Clara was giggling as Lauren stepped towards him, holding out both arms. Joe found himself backing away, the beer making him woozy, the candles throwing looming shadows round the walls. He never cried over movies. Okay, aside from Point Break, but that was only because his mother had recorded an episode of Neighbours over it 10 minutes from the end.
"I'm fine,"
he said, straightening up, glad to see the end credits rolling.
"Fine,"
he repeated, his voice more confident.
"I love that film," Lauren said. "That kiss in the rain is just..."
She was lost to a daydream.
"How was the cinema?"
Joe asked, perching himself on the end of the sofa, folding his arms and trying to look as sensible as he could. Lauren said dreamily, still soaked and in Ryan Gosling's arms after a heavy storm in a rowing boat. Clara moved towards the bathroom, calling over her shoulder.
"Lauren's in love," she giggled.
Joe looked at Lauren, wanting desperately to escape to his own room. Lauren was perhaps feeling the same, glancing around the flat, clearly struggling for something to say. "It's looking very hygge in here," she commented. Joe followed her gaze, taking in the candles, the rug, the hot water bottle.
"I thought I'd make it, you know, nice," he said, feeling a bit foolish.
Clara had left the bathroom and was heading to the kitchen.
"I was just saying to Joe,"
Lauren called in a pointed voice. How very hygge it's looking in here. Don't you think, Clara? Jo frowned. Why was she giving Clara such a strange look? Clara looked thrown by the comment, not speaking for a moment.
It is very cozy, she stuttered.
Something passed between the two women, and Jo felt like an outsider, missing some punchline or joke.
Hmm,
he said, walking around the room and blowing out candles, the sharp smell of smoke immediate, making his eyes water for the 100th time that night. Were there any more tears in him? He must have red eyes, a swollen face. He needed to get out of here. The fact that he'd found Clara crying over a beer bottle and blue Santa hats didn't make him feel much better. He wasn't used to being caught on the hop in this way.
Sleep well, he said, his throat scratchy.
You too, Lauren called. He heard Clara hiss something at her, and as he closed his door, he caught the snuffle of giggles. Chapter 28. Clara woke to the sound of silence and reached a hand out to pull back the curtain. The rain had gone and the sky was blue, clouds clinging to the horizon. She stretched, hearing a cough from the kitchen next door. Jo was up early. She had been relieved not to have seen him all week, embarrassed about her Yalde meltdown, not sure what was happening with the shop, but she found she was smiling at the sound, sinking into the bed and listening out for him. Shrugging on a thick cardigan and opening her door, she was surprised to see him hunched over his laptop at the table, his chin in one hand as he stared at the screen, eyes bloodshot. Last night's hygge vibe was clearly long gone. She felt a little whisper of sadness. Hey, she said, even her quiet voice making him start. He tapped at the keyboard before returning to staring at the screen. Coffee? She asked, moving past him to switch on the kettle.
Nice to see you! To see you, nice! Lady Carcar called out.
Clara dropped some pellets in her cage.
Lunch is for wimps!
The parrot yelled, obviously picking up on Joe's vibe. Roddy wound around Clara's legs as she added milk to the mugs and passed one to Joe.
Thanks,
he said, taking it from her. She noticed his hand shaking as he drank.
Everything all right? She asked, feeling a wave of sympathy for him.
Fine. Busy. Just having to unravel the mess that is my mother's accounts, he said, looking with a frown at the kitchen table where a pile of receipts, bank statements, and dog-eared exercise books rested.
Whilst simultaneously hoping my team don't screw up the biggest deal of the year tomorrow.
Sounds stressful, she said, cutting a slice of malt loaf and slathering butter on it. Here, she said, handing him the plate. Breakfast. Have you been up long? She asked, taking in a pile of empty crisp packets, three glasses containing the remnants of various coloured liquids, and a thin silver packet. All eight pills popped out. He took the plate without looking at her.
Yeah, sort of. I couldn't sleep after that film, and I knew I should have worked. I think I fell asleep for a bit.
Looking down at the plate in his hand and then up at her, he seemed to come round.
Thanks,
he said, an unreadable expression crossing his face at the same moment that one of the many devices in front of him pinged. Clara rested against the work surface, sipping her drink, looking at the bags under his eyes, his grey expression. She thought he'd been trying a little harder to relax, to unwind, but the moment he was surrounded by the laptop and the phone, he seemed completely sucked into another world.
"Let's go somewhere," she said in a loud voice.
"What?"
he said, simultaneously taking a bite of malt loaf and tapping at the keyboard with his other hand.
"Let's go somewhere. Out. Like normal people do on a weekend."
The bread was clenched between his teeth as he tapped the keyboard with both hands. His eyes flicked up towards her, but he obviously wasn't ready to talk. At last he stopped, removed the bread, and swallowed.
Out?
Clara nodded, pushing an errant strand of hair behind her ear.
I want to see the sea.
Go ahead, make my day.
Clara blushed, pretending she hadn't heard, as Lady Carcar stood watching them from her perch.
The sea?
Clara nodded. Jo looked unsure, staring at her as if she'd suggested they get on a flight to another country.
Come on, she continued. It'll be fun.
Okay, he said slowly. I suppose we could.
Clara clapped her hands together, feeling a sudden joy sweep through her. She hadn't realized she needed the release.
Great! I'll just get dressed and we can go.
Joe was closing his laptop.
Right. The sea, he repeated.
He still seemed quite shell-shocked. Clara started to walk back to her bedroom.
Oh, one rule, she said, turning back. No phone.
She pointed to the offending item in his hand.
But what if work...
It's Sunday,
she said, cutting him off in a voice of old, a voice that had once been listened to.
No one should work every single day of the week. In Denmark, people work a 34-hour week in total. You do that in 2 days.
A 34-hour week, Joe said, shuffling papers and unplugging his laptop. How do they get any work done?
Clara had moved through to the bedroom and was scooping up various things, throwing them into a bag.
It's not all about work, you know, she called. And actually, they think that if you can't get everything done within that time, then it's sort of inefficient.
She was glad she couldn't see his face. There was silence as she reappeared. He was tapping at his phone.
I'm serious,
she said, marching over to him and holding out her hand as if he were a toddler with a forbidden sweet.
I can't. You don't understand. You've never had a job like mine, he protested.
She opened her mouth to say something and then closed it again.
We're expected to be contactable at all times, he stressed. Tom, the other managing director, is suspicious. I think he's ready to bury me.
But it's just not healthy, Clara said, still holding out her hand.
Joe was staring at it as if she were about to attack him.
I'll put it on silent.
Nope.
I'll leave it in the car.
Joe!
Clara said, her voice exasperated now.
You just don't get it, he said, looking worriedly down at the item in question.
She dropped her hand and took a breath.
Actually, I do,
she said, and sighed.
I used to be surgically attached to mine.
I worked in London, as a trader, for 6 years. Joe had been about to say something, but now his mouth fell open.
I was doing 16-hour days, all-nighters, didn't go home to Denmark for months, neglected my friends, my family,
she added in a quieter voice, staring off into the distance before turning away so Joe couldn't see her face. There was silence for a while, and she wondered if he was back on his phone, tapping out another email. But when she peeked, he was still just staring at her.
6 years.
She nodded.
But why did you... You worked as a... But you're so...
It was almost amusing watching him struggle for words. But Clara hated talking about that time in her life. It had been the reason she had changed everything. She still regretted not seeing how absorbed she'd been with it all, to the extent that she hadn't noticed important things happening to people she loved. Her mum, the visits to the doctor she'd brushed off, Clara not there to realize. She swallowed.
It was a while ago now. It doesn't matter.
She wished she hadn't brought it up. She was just fed up with Joe thinking she didn't understand, that she couldn't understand. She She knew exactly what it was like to feel the bank owned you, that your mobile and laptop ruled your working life and your home life because there was no line anymore. People could call or email at any hour, and someone would expect you to answer, to jump to it. And if you didn't, someone else would, and you'd be for the chop. She moved to the door. If they weren't going to the beach, she could at least go outside. Then she heard him.
Wait.
He placed his phone on the table and held up his hand.
Give me 2 minutes, he said.
He went into his bedroom and she could hear him opening cupboards and drawers.
You're not expecting us to swim, are you?
He called through.
It's December, Joe.
His head appeared in the doorway.
So that's a no?
He said uncertainly.
Of course it's a no. It's like -3, she pointed out, staring at him as if he was mad.
You seem the type to want to do that sort of thing,
he said, returning to his rummaging. She wondered what he'd meant by that. Active? Impulsive? Clinically insane?
Ready,
he huffed, emerging with a rucksack, wearing a beanie hat she hadn't seen on him before. He looked different, and for a second she couldn't put her finger on why, until she realized it was the first time she'd seen him dress really casually. I like your hat, she said, feeling weirdly shy. He touched it self-consciously.
Thanks. Haven't worn it in a while, he said, picking up his keys. Well, come on then. The beach it is,
he said, and walked over to the door, opening it and waiting for her to step through.
May the force be with you,
Lady Carcar cried out as Clara glanced back. Joe's phone was on the table where he'd left it. She gave him a smile as she walked through and down the stairs. He started asking her questions the moment they pulled out from the curb.
Which bank?
UBS.
They're big.
Yep.
What was the biggest deal you did?
What is this, a competition? I'm not telling you that. A lot. It was a lot.
Prove it,
he said, banging one hand on the wheel, a smile on his face.
What do you mean?
Clara laughed, leaning back into the seat.
Prove you really did it. Say something a trader would say.
What, like, talk about the dealer board and how I spent my days observing the signs making up the price action, including price fluctuations and the liquidity of the order book?
You did work as a trader.
He snuck a sideways look at her.
I told you I did.
I thought it was just a lie to make me go to the beach.
It was to make you take me to the beach, but I'm not that manipulative.
So,
Joe was clearly about to launch into another raft of questions.
Look, Clara said, cutting him off. I spent most of the 6 years shouting and swearing at people on the trading floor. Sometimes I miss that madness. That was what drew me into it, and I wanted to prove I could do it. But I really don't want to talk about it now. That bit of my life is over. I couldn't stay in it. I wasn't happy.
Okay, but did you...
She looked at his animated face. Enough now, she said in a gentle voice. Joe caught her expression.
Enough, he agreed. Can see how you might have been a bit scary on the trading floor,
he added, biting his lip. Clara smiled and rested her head back on the smooth leather, focusing on the road ahead, the car pristine, her feet lost in the cavernous footwell, the sound of the tyres barely there as they twisted through narrow lanes to the coast. Then there it was ahead, a thin strip of silver under brooding grey clouds, and Clara found herself smiling as she turned to Joe. The sea. They drove along the seafront. Joe tense at first, as he fretted over whether parking was free, if someone would steal the car, whether he would need his hat. As they hit the stony beach, crunched over the pebbles, he seemed to grow quieter, start to look around him, And then they were walking along the shoreline, the waves rolling in, barely a breeze, the water sucked away before returning. A seagull hovering over the water, a ferry moving slowly past in the distance. A line of pink buoys like tiny heads bobbing just off the shore.
"Mum and I used to come here at weekends," he said, eyes ahead. "She used to skim stones with me. Then we'd have fish and chips huddled on a single towel that smelt of vinegar for days afterwards."
Clara held her breath. Joe had hardly said anything about his childhood, his mum, and it was so lovely to picture him as a young boy. "What about your dad?" she asked, realizing she'd never heard him mention his father. Joe moved to sit down on the pebbles, and Clara sat next to him, wondering if he'd heard her. He raked a hand through the stones.
"He left, when I was 8.
"Oh," Clara said, "that must have been hard." Joe picked up one of the pebbles, turning it between his fingers.
"It was. We moved around a lot. My mum, well, she hadn't expected it. Couldn't stay in any one place."
Clara looked at him as he spoke, starting to understand a little more. His need to give his mother some stability. "Do you see him?" Joe shook his head.
"Not much anymore. Once a year we have lunch. I used to be desperate to see him, to be like him, to show him I'd succeeded. I'd always wanted to work in the city, be important like him."
He laughed, but the noise was hollow, and Clara felt the urge to reach for him. "He should be very proud," she said. Joe looked at her then, his grey eyes trained on her face.
"Thank you."
Then, as if aware the mood had shifted, he got to his feet.
"Shall we keep walking?"
Clara stood up, followed him.
"How about you?" Joe said. "Do you miss your family?"
Clara was glad to be moving, could feel the familiar sting at the back of her eyes. "My parents separated when I was small, and my dad has his own life, but we've always got on. He's always seen me. I've got 2 stepsisters, twins. They're 14. She hoped that was enough information.
"Your mum?"
he asked. Clara squinted out across the water that was the same grey as Joe's eyes, as if she might be rescued by a passing boat or a bolt of lightning. Nothing, of course, just the relentless noise of the waves and her own silence.
"She was ill,"
she said at last, her voice almost lost to the wind.
"She was ill and she died last year."
Joe stopped abruptly. Clara had moved forward a few paces before she noticed.
"I'm so sorry," he said, his expression aghast.
"It's okay," she said, wiping at her face. "Well, it's not okay, but thank you."
"How did she... Do you mind me asking?"
Clara swallowed.
"She had pancreatic cancer. She had treatment, but it wasn't found until it had spread to other sites, and the end was... quick."
Joe looked at her.
"I'm so sorry, Clara."
She couldn't hold his gaze for long.
"She didn't tell me much about it," she admitted, realizing that now she was talking, she couldn't stop if she tried. "She knew I had my life in London and was worried about me."
She started to cry, unable to keep it all in. All those times she'd snatched brief phone conversations with her mum, boring her with the stresses of her life in the city. Her upsets with colleagues, lost business, falling share prices. While her mum was on the other end of the line, dying and saying nothing.
"She loved you,"
Joe said, a hand on her arm. Clara nodded, pressing her lips together.
"I loved her."
"Of course you did," Joe said, pulling her towards him. She felt his arms around her, her face pressed against his chest. Her body relaxed into him and she got herself back under control. They stood there for a while as her breathing returned to normal, and she noticed that he smelt of wood smoke and aftershave. Then she was blinking into his chest, not sure when to pull away. He drew back, both hands on her upper arms.
"Do you want to carry on? There's a place selling donuts just over there."
He looked at her then, a slow, sad smile filling his face, clearly trying to make her feel better.
"A donut would be good,"
she said, with a last wipe of her eyes. They didn't talk about much else for the rest of the day, ambling along the seafront, past a merry-go-round and back to the car, Joe opening the door and letting her slide inside. When they arrived back outside the shop, he turned off the engine and they sat for a moment in silence.
"Well," said Joe at last, tapping a finger on the steering wheel. "Thanks for getting me out in the fresh air."
"I'm glad we went," Clara said, catching his eye and seeing something new there.
"Thank you."
She felt the words were weighted with so much more. Joe nodded before finally releasing his seatbelt and getting out of the car. They moved through the corridor and up the stairs without speaking. Was she imagining the momentary pause as they stood in the doorway of the flat?
"My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius, Commander of the Armies of the North!"
Lady Carcar made them both jump. And then, as if she'd broken the spell, they moved inside. Joe picked up his phone, and whatever it was had passed. An hour later, he was at the same spot at the table, the phone to his ear, the laptop screen glowing, and it was as if those few hours on the beach had happened to two different people, in a completely different world. Only the look he gave her as she said good night, his mouth half open as he lingered by his bedroom door, made her think anything had changed.
"It's Lady Carcar's birthday today. Do be sure to tell Clara to give her some extra treats. I think she hates having her birthday so close to Christmas. Perhaps I shall move it to June, like the Queen. I think she'd like that. I'm so pleased it's all going well and you're getting so many customers through the door. It takes you an age to reply to me, so I know you must be run off your feet. Or struggling. Do you have a lot of vowels? It's very hard if you don't. Although I always get too many U's, and what can you really do with a U? We're experiencing a mini heat wave here. Apparently the warm air is coming from the Sahara. It's just not feeling festive. There's too much sunshine around. How can you possibly think about gearing up for Christmas when you're sunbathing under a clear blue sky? Still, one mustn't fuss when one is spending the day in just a swimsuit and sarong. The manager has just popped by to ask me whether I am renting next month. He's a funny man, about 3 foot tall, with a most enormous beard. If they ever remake those Hobbit films, he'd be entirely perfect. Now, do send me some photos of the woods and fields behind the village. You know how I love it in winter when everything is frozen white." Chapter 29. Joe had planned to leave on Sunday night to be in the office first thing on Monday. The merger was being finalized, contracts signed. It was a huge day for him, for the team. But he hadn't been able to leave Clara that evening. Wanted to stay in the flat, keep an eye on her. He'd crept downstairs when it was still dark on Monday morning, the whole of Suffolk sleeping, dawn leaking over the horizon as he raced down the motorway to London. Now the deal was done. They'd signed the contracts. His bosses had waited in the outer office, ready to shake hands with the clients as they left the building. Joe had watched them talking as they milled outside the lift, Andy slapping one of them on the back, Karen looking like she'd won the lottery. Which she had. He should have been euphoric. They'd just made billions of pounds for the company. They'd been working on the merger for months.
Normally, he'd be taking the whole team out for a celebratory dinner and drinks, on to a nightclub for champagne. When he returned to the office, they were already downing shots, sliding a bottle his way, cheering and joshing each other. He found himself grabbing his coat, heading to the car park beneath the building, barely waiting to hear what they were saying. Within minutes, he was in the car, heading out of the city, forgetting things the further he moved away, focusing on what was ahead. He got back to find the flat empty, everything neat and tidy, the large dining table wiped down, a vase of fresh flowers in the centre, blankets folded and slung on the back of the sofa and armchair. It made him feel calmer just to look around the ordered space. Roddy was the only blight on the scene, a large orange furball shedding on a rug in front of the wood burner which was warming the room. A babble of voices below him grew louder as he opened the flat door and peered down the stairs. Through the frosted glass of the side door, he could make out the shapes of people moving past. The shop was obviously chocker, and he moved back inside to throw on some different clothes and go to help, bubbling with curiosity about the new window display. After they'd got back from the beach, Clara had spent the rest of Sunday in the shop, refusing him entry, announcing that he would have to wait to see it like everyone else. He stared at himself in the mirror. Window displays? What next? And yet he was smiling goofily. She was behind the counter, chatting to a woman with tight curly hair when he moved inside the shop. He couldn't help heading straight over to peek into the window. The new display had clearly taken her hours. There was green cloth, mounds of it, creating the illusion of fields, divided by small lines of plastic fences. Animals grazed in the squares. She had found every type of farmyard animal, pigs, cows, horses, chickens and sheep, to scatter in groups. A farmer, a milkmaid, a shiny red tractor, a plough, completed the scene. It was rural England, a brilliant glimpse of a summer's day on a farm. He could almost hear the snuffling of the pigs, the cockerel's cry, the whickering of the horses in the fields. "I opened the shop on a Monday. I hope you don't mind, but it's busy," she was babbling. "Do you like it?" she added, standing close to him, biting her bottom lip as if his verdict actually mattered. He loved it. He should have told her at that moment. Something about it had touched him, reminded him of his childhood, his mum sitting on the floor of his bedroom revving up a huge yellow tractor, determined to give him the toys he'd wanted, to play with him when he was on his own.
"I..."
"Clara!"
a woman was beckoning from the other side of the room. Clara was already moving away, and he hadn't said a thing. He looked back at the farmyard scene, catching the eye of a father outside, holding hands with his son, who was gesturing at the shop. He felt the same flash of envy even now, 25 years later, as the man smiled and followed the boy inside. Joe moved back over to the counter, amazed to see yet more people milling around, many clutching brown paper bags holding their own painted toys. Clara really had created a buzz about the place, and he felt a pang that his mother wasn't here revelling in the atmosphere. She loved noise and people. He suddenly felt desperately lonely, despite all the people pushing past him.
"Joe! Joe, do you mind?"
Clara was calling across to him, snapping him out of his thoughts. He brushed at his face, suddenly worried that she could see inside his head.
"I just need to pop out into the workshop and get one of the toys," she gestured at the till. "I won't be long, a second or two, well, a few seconds."
She was babbling, pushing a strand of blonde hair behind her ear.
"It's fine. I've got it,"
he said, walking down the aisle to take up her spot at the counter and holding out his hand, accepting the box, Holiday Barbie, from the smiling girl, head only as high as the counter.
"Take as long as you like,"
he added, a small concession when he knew he needed to say a whole lot more.
"My birthday," the girl announced, stepping back to point to a large badge on her coat with a glittering purple 6 on it.
"Oh, happy birthday," Joe said in return,
feeling his own mouth tug into a smile in response to her wide grin, her button nose wrinkled. Her mother passed over the money, a hand resting on the top of her daughter's head.
"We're going back to make a cake," she said, "in the shape of a spaceship."
"Enterprising,"
Joe said, giving her her change. He looked back down at the girl.
"My mum used to make me cakes in different shapes. One year, she made an entire pirate ship with a plank to throw people overboard and everything."
He wasn't sure where that had come from, felt gratified to see her mouth form an ooh of surprise. Cake making? 6-year-old girls' birthdays? This was not Joe's world. He was used to a lot of other men in suits, office banter that bordered on bullying. He shuddered as he thought of his team and what they would say if they saw him now, surrounded by small children, soft toys, dolls and balloons. He straightened up, feeling eyes on him, turning just in time to catch the back of Clara's head as she whipped back round. Had she been listening? He stayed in the shop for the rest of the afternoon, helping behind the counter and collecting the toys from the workshop, marvelling at how many people seemed to come in and greet Clara. She appeared to have made more friends in a few weeks there than he had in London over the same number of years. He started to realise why his mother had always described the village as friendly. Everyone just talked to you, as if it was normal, even if you were a stranger. In London, if someone spoke to Joe in that way, he would assume they wanted money. The afternoon went quickly. Joe now used to the shouts and excited squeals. He lingered at the end of the day, finding more jobs, rolling the shutters down, sweeping the floor, locking the door behind the last customer. He'd barely thought about work, whether his team cared that he'd left. He just wanted to be in the shop, near Clara.
"Well," he said, the room in semi-darkness, Joe suddenly uncomfortable at it just being the two of them.
He opened his mouth to say something about the display, about the shop. Clara was sitting on a stool at the counter, separating piles of notes and coins, her hair falling forward as she worked. Joe had a flashback that made his throat feel tight. His own mother, curls bouncing as she bounded round the counter to show a customer a new toy. Joe himself sitting solemnly on a stool by the counter, waiting for the clock to turn 5. They would cash up together, Joe marvelling at the piles of coins that his mother would pour into small clear bags, the notes in a wallet that they would then put in his rucksack, walking out of the shop together to drop the day's takings at the bank in the high street.
"I thought I would make dinner tonight," he said,
his voice sounding smaller in the space. He cleared his throat. Clara had looked up from what she was doing. He noticed violet shadows under her eyes that he didn't think had been there a couple of days ago.
"Are you sure? I don't mind."
"I'm very sure."
He should be thanking her for all the other evenings when she'd cooked and waited on him, but perhaps tonight was his opportunity. He had never been one for words. Best to show her.
"I won't be long,"
he said in a loud voice, jangling car keys at her.
"Great,"
she said, doing a pretty awful job of trying not to look surprised. He could see her watching him through the glass door of the shop as he got into his car, and he felt his hand move in a half wave. She nodded, her cheeks turning a deeper peach as she returned to the piles on the counter. Half an hour later, he was wandering down a supermarket aisle, taking an inordinate amount of time before finally settling on 2 enormous fillet steaks, a bag of Maris Piper potatoes, and some sugar snap peas. He was about to head to the checkout when he remembered that Clara had often produced a dessert. Heading to the refrigerated section, he panicked in the face of the enormous selection of pies, crumbles, and cakes on offer. What would she like? He thought back over the things she'd produced, hand hovering over an apple pie. Something straightforward, no fuss. Then he spotted a large dark chocolate cake covered in thick icing. He dallied for another few moments, earning himself a tut from an elderly woman, before deciding to buy both. She was sure to like one of them. He bit his lip, wondering why a pudding had managed to push him into such a spin. His hand reached automatically for his inside pocket, and the packet inside, before stopping halfway there. His kitchen in London was pretty bare. He normally got takeaways on the rare occasions he was back at his flat in time for dinner. He wasn't even sure he had anything in his fridge aside from beer and champagne. But he used to cook. His mother had taught him when he was younger, and now he found himself humming as he moved around the kitchen, chopping and testing. He was heating the steaks in the oven so the insides were warm, the griddle sizzling in preparation. He wanted to wait until the last moment to ensure they were perfect. Clara was still in the bathroom, had been for a good hour, moving through with a book tucked under her arm, a box of matches in one hand, a rolled-up towel in the other. After another 5 minutes, he started to worry. He hadn't heard a sound. She might have drowned, fallen asleep in the water. She had looked tired earlier. He coughed loudly outside the door. No reply. He wavered, knowing she was fine, really, just enjoying her bath. He strained to listen. No sound. No lap of water, no rustle of pages. He found himself calling in a high-pitched voice.
"Dinner ready in 10!"
There was a small splash.
"Lovely. Thank you."
It startled him. She sounded close, as if she was just on the other side of the door, centimetres away. He sprang back, returning to watch his griddle.
"Excellent. Excellent," he called.
"Take me to bed or lose me forever."
"What?" asked Clara through the door. Joe felt himself die inside, shooting Lady Carcar the filthiest look.
"Just, the parrot,"
he called back, lifting a warning finger at the cage. Lady Carcar turned on one claw and moved back across the perch.
"You can't handle the truth."
Worried that Clara would find him standing there just waiting for her to be ready, he moved across to the large cupboard and unearthed the Hoover. She had tidied the flat, but it would be good to make things spotless. The Hoover was ancient, still with a rocket sticker on the front from the days when he had hoovered around his mother's legs as a boy. Switching it on and plugging it in, he ran it across the carpet, nudging Roddy, who gave him a filthy look and simply rolled over onto his other side. He was sweating lightly by the time he had finished, and Clara was standing in the kitchen, her wet hair in a high bun, a thick cardigan and knitted socks over leggings.
"Great, you're ready,"
he said, moving across to the oven.
"Do sit,"
he said, pointing to the table which was laid for two people. She raised an eyebrow as she took in the sight.
"You lit candles,"
she said, her hands coming together as if she might clap. He was glad to be bending down over the oven so the heat was on his face anyway.
"Well, I knew you were obsessed with them,"
he mumbled, torn between embarrassment and pleasure.
"You had me at hello,"
Lady Carcar shouted to the corner. Joe dished up the food, pleased with the neat charcoal lines on the steak, the soft red inside as Clara sliced through it.
"Amazing,"
she said, holding a hand over her mouth as she chewed.
"Perfect."
Joe felt a rush of joy, his body finally relaxing. He reached for his glass of red wine, relishing the flavour of the meat, which seemed to taste better because he'd cooked it himself. He felt a peace descend on him for the first time in a long while. Since the walk on the beach, he hadn't felt the need to make small talk with Clara, and now they were just enjoying the sound of the wind outside. Winter whistling past the window as they sat snug inside in the glow from the candles. The light softened her face so that he felt an urge to reach out and touch her. He stared at her hand resting next to her fork for the longest time. What was happening to him? He hadn't thought of work all night, and even stranger, when he did think about it, there was no panic, no tightening in his chest, no urge to discover what was happening. They would already be looking for new business. Another merger was always around the corner. The markets might be up, might be down. Deals would come and deals would go. And tonight, he just couldn't care less. Clara had a slice of apple pie, had laughed as he'd produced both puddings.
"I've got an idea,"
Joe said, scraping back his chair and getting up. Dragging the chair across the room, he popped open a trapdoor in the ceiling and pulled down the ladder folded up inside.
Local knowledge,
he smiled, turning to her.
Want to see?
Clara nodded at him, standing up and reaching for her wine glass.
Hold on, I'll go up first.